Welcome to the Poem of the Week. As you know, poems are patient-oriented evidence that matters. Each week, our poem is intended to help you practice the best, most current medicine by alerting you to studies that could change your practice. As usual, our host this week is National Public Radio's Dr. Michael Wilkes, and he is joined by InfoPoem's senior editor, Dr. Mark Abel. Gentlemen.
This week's poem requires some background on GERD, or gastroesophageal reflux disease. We've all been taught that this occurs when the gastric's contents refluxes up into the esophagus and it causes heartburn and indigestion. The condition is common, affecting 25% of all Americans. Of these, a minority will have some finding on endoscopy. The rest will appear completely normal. We have also been taught that there are some conditions that predispose to reflux disease, things like obesity, smoking, alcohol, and some foods. While it makes sense that some of these causes disease, there's still no good studies proving a cause and effect. Prognosis for GERD is guarded. 80% of people have a recurrence after treatment is stopped, which means that most people remain on treatment for long periods of time. Most of us have grown accustomed to prescribing PPIs, or proton pump inhibitors, for reflux disease because randomized control trials showed that they are slightly more effective than H2 blockers. But there is now concern over the drug safety with regard to bone injuries. Mark Abel is here to help us understand whether or not PPIs increase the risk of hip fractures.
Well, these researchers use data from the United Kingdom General Practice Research Database, and that database has information about prescription use as well as linking that data to hospitalizations for a variety of things, including hip fracture. Now, we know that proton pump inhibitors, or PPIs, are great at blocking stomach acid, but they might also reduce the absorption of calcium. There's been concern that as we give these agents to more and more patients, that might have some adverse consequences. This was a case control study, and the cases were people over age 50 with a first occurrence of hip fracture. And they matched each of these cases with 10 controls who were similar in age and gender and the duration of follow-up in the database. And the exposure of interest was the cumulative exposure to proton pump inhibitors followed for up to 4 years. And the researchers tried to control statistically for potential confounders, things like how big the patients were, their body mass index, smoking, alcoholism, impaired mobility, in other words, things that might be associated with both the exposure and the outcome of fracture. Overall, they found 13,500 patients with hip fracture and matched them with over 135,000 controls. And they found that using a PPI for more than a year was associated with a significantly increased risk of hip fracture. The relative increase was 44%, which sounds very impressive and will garner you a lot of headlines. But I think you have to remember hip fracture is relatively rare. So what we're actually talking about is one extra fracture for every 250 people who use a PPI for 5 years. And the risk was higher if patients took higher doses of PPIs and if they took them for a longer time. I think it's also important to note that the H2 blockers like ranitidine did not significantly increase the risk of fracture.
How common is it for patients to be on proton pump inhibitors for 5 years? It sounds like a long time to me.
It is, but these are heavily promoted drugs. They are among the most commonly prescribed drugs in the United States and in other countries as well. So I can't give you a percentage of the population, but there certainly are a substantial number of patients that are on these drugs long term. And as our society gets bigger and more obese, certainly that's probably the most important risk factor for GERD is obesity. And so, this is going to be more of an issue, not less of one in the future.
Now, clearly, a case control study can't determine etiology, but the thinking you mentioned is that somehow these drugs are decreasing the absorption of calcium. Any thinking about whether if you actually take calcium along with these, are you going to be able to absorb enough?
Yeah, it's not clear. They did not investigate that in this study, so it's not clear whether those who had took supplements of calcium and vitamin D were less likely to have hip fractures. The study was done in England where they, of course, never do see the sun, and that's an important part of this whole process. physiology studies have looked at this malabsorption effect. And in the petri dish and in the laboratory, it looks like it may be greatest when the stomach's empty, when the patient's fasting. So they theorize that taking the PPI with a meal could reduce this effect. We really don't have real clinical evidence of this. And as you note, this is exploratory work. It does not prove that this association is causal, but it certainly makes sense physiologically, and I think it means we're going to be seeing more studies on this in the future.
Great. So what's the bottom line?
Well, bottom line is that long-term use of PPIs, especially in higher doses, is associated with an increased risk of hip fracture in adults over 50. The absolute risk increase is modest, only about one fracture for every 250 people over 5 years, but it seems to make sense to encourage patients to use the least acid-reducing therapy possible. There have been a lot of good studies, several done at the University of Michigan's VA Medical Center, where they found that a third to a half of patients could cut down from a twice-a-day PPI to once a day, or from a PPI to an H2 blocker, or from an H2 blocker to nothing, if given appropriate support.
It may even be that people can start on H2 blockers and see if they work, and only upon failure move to PPIs.
Absolutely. I think that would be prudent. They're certainly much less expensive, and they have an excellent long-term safety record.
Well, that's some more patient-oriented evidence that helps improve our clinical practice. Thanks, Mark, and we'll talk with you again next week.
My pleasure.
Talk to you next week.
That's this week's poem. Thanks for listening. If you'd like to look at this and other recent poems, please go to www.infopoems.com. Please join us again next week for another medical poem.